This is Audible.
Recorded Books and RB Digital present Hero at the Fall by Alwyn Hamilton. Narrated by Sunila Nankani. Chapter 1. I woke from a sleep filled with nightmares to the sound of my name. I was already reaching for a gun when I recognized Sara's face above me, swimming in and out of focus as my eyes blurred with exhaustion. My grip on the trigger eased. It wasn't an enemy, just Sara, the guardian of the hidden house. She was holding a small lamp that lit up only her face. For a moment, she looked like a disembodied head floating in the dark, like the ones in the dream that was fading now as I woke. Emin wearing Ahmed's face going willingly to the executioner stage. My cousin Shira screaming her defiance as she was forced to her knees in front of the block. Ayat with eyes full of madness, awaiting the death that would come from having her soul drained out of her. Rana, the Demji child who had carried the sun in her hands and died by a stray bullet in a battle she shouldn't have been fighting. Bahi, who'd burned in front of me at my brother's hand. My mother, who'd swung from a rope back in Dustwalk for shooting her husband, the man who'd never been my father anyway. People I had watched die. People I had let die. The accusation was all over their faces. But Sara was real. Sara was still alive. And so were others. When the Sultan ambushed our camp in the city, many were captured, but there was only one execution. Emin, our Demji shapeshifter. Emin had died wearing Ahmed's face to deceive the Sultan and all of Isman into thinking the rebel prince was dead, while Delilah cast an illusion to hide her real brother, still jailed with the rest of the rebellion's leaders. Ahmed was still alive. So was Shahzad, our general, even if she didn't like being called that. We needed her back to lead us in the fight against the Sultan. And Rahim, another of the Sultan's sons who had held a grudge against our exalted ruler since he caused his mother's death. He was our key to a whole army in the mountain who had never been loyal to the Sultan, but to him instead. And now it was up to me to rescue them. And all the other captured rebels, with the help of a handful of others who had escaped capture that night. Our reluctant Prince Jin, our professionally difficult gold-skinned Demji Hala, our shape-shifting twins Iz and Maz, and our semi-reliable foreign thief Sam. Not exactly an army, but it was what we had left. I'd fallen asleep in a chair in some corner of the hidden house, our last refuge in Isman, where what was left of the rebellion had retreated. A faint glow coming in through the window danced across Sara's face, enough for me to see the worry etched there. Her hair was tousled from a restless night, and a dark red robe hung loosely over her nightclothes, like she'd tied it in a hurry. It must have been dawn. My body still felt heavy with exhaustion, like I'd slept only a few hours. But I reckoned I could sleep a year and I still wouldn't shed this tiredness from my bones. It was the exhaustion of pain and of grief. My side still throbbed from the effort of using my powers a few hours ago. And for a second, my vision tilted dangerously to one side, like I might lose my footing. What's happening? My voice came out a croak as I stretched my aching body, still sore from being cut open by my aunt just yesterday. A necessary evil to get out the iron the Sultan had put under my skin to keep me from accessing my Demji power. Is it morning? No, it's late. I got up because the baby was fussing. As my eyes slowly adjusted, I noticed the sleeping infant balanced in the crook of her left arm. It was little Fadi, my cousin Shira's newborn Demji son. If there was any justice in the world, he'd be with his mother now. But Shira had lost her head on the chopping block, too. I remembered the accusation in Shira's gaze in my nightmare, that her son would grow up without a family, all because of me. When I woke up, there was... Sara hesitated. I think you'd better see for yourself.
That didn't sound good. I pressed my palms against my tired eyes.
What else could possibly have gone wrong in the last few hours? Behind my lids, I saw Emin's head falling onto that stage all over again. I dropped my hands away from my face.
Better to face reality than nightmares.
All right, I said, slowly getting to my feet.
Lead the way.
Cradling the small, blue-haired Demji in her arms, Sara led me up the dark, winding staircase to the rooftop that gave the hidden house its name. The garden that topped the flat building was surrounded on all sides by trellises thick with flowers that concealed the house from prying eyes and kept Sara and all the women under her charge safe. I knew something was wrong before we fully emerged onto the roof. It was late at night, but there was a dim glow outside, like the red of an angry dawn, that didn't make any sense this near midnight, not even in summer. Sara reached the roof ahead of me and then quickly stepped out of the way, giving me an unobstructed view. And I saw what she was talking about. The city of Ismon was domed by fire. Rippling flames hung over my head and to every side of us, like an immense vault placed over the city. I could just see the stars on the other side, but it was like looking through warped glass. They were blurry and indistinct. To the west, I could see the fire arching down toward the walls of the city, and to the north, it plunged down toward the sea. A memory came to me from nowhere, of my mother in our kitchen when I was little, slamming a glass over a beetle as it scurried across the kitchen table, capturing it inside. I'd watched curiously as the thing scrambled up the side of the glass, frantic and confused. Trapped. Staring up at the dome of fire over us, I understood that little dustwalk beetle pretty well right now.
It's magic, Sara said, gazing grimly up at the stars through the sheen of flames.
No. I might have believed that too once upon a time, but I recognized it, this flickering, too bright, not entirely natural fire. It was the same one I'd seen bloom in the vaults under the palace when the genie Farish Day had been killed in the Sultan's machine. It was the same stolen fire that I had seen light up the Abdals, the Sultan's mechanical soldiers, who even now patrolled the streets below us, keeping the curfew. It's an inventor's trick. Some new creation of Layla's, the Sultan's inventor daughter, designed to keep us imprisoned here. Except, even though this was new, there was something strangely familiar about it. And lo, a great wall of flames did enclose the mountain, trapping her for all eternity. Those words from the holy books sprang into my mind fully formed. Dustwalk had drummed scripture into me for the first 16 years of my life. I knew the story of Ashra's wall as well as anyone. The great barrier of fire that imprisoned the destroyer of worlds at the end of the first war. Killing immortal beings. Resurrecting ideas from the holy books. The Sultan really was playing at being a god now. Except this wasn't to protect us from some great evil, and this was far from holy work. We were trapped here by the great evil.
I didn't wake the rest of the house. Just Jin. Though it took me longer than I would have liked before I finally found him in one of the many rooms of the house. He'd fallen asleep, fully clothed, on top of an unmade bed, with his arm flung over his face against the light. I didn't even have to shake him awake. The moment my hand touched his shoulder, his eyes snapped open, his hand clamping painfully over my wrist, moments away from breaking it, before he recognized me. He cursed in Si Qian, his grip loosening quickly as he sat up. He fought for alertness through the exhaustion.
"You startled me, bandit."
"Don't try to tell me this is the first time you've been woken up by a girl in the dead of night." My lightness was strained as I pushed a strand of dark hair out of his face with my now freed hand so I could see him clearly. He needed to cut it. But it had been a long time since we'd had the luxury of time for frivolous things. Not since we were pushed out of our camp in the desert. Jin caught my hand again, but more gently this time, and for a moment there was a ghost of that old smile, one that meant simpler trouble than the kind we were in right now. But before he could give voice to whatever thought it was that went with that smile, my words reached his tired mind.
"It can't be the dead of night."
He glanced at the light leaking through the window, and my brief moment of dodging the real world was gone. I told him what Sara had shown me as we waited anxiously for the real dawn. The house woke little by little around us, and the same unsettled feeling draped over everyone's shoulders, one by one, as they saw the dome. Each of them looking at me for answers I didn't have. How is it made? Can we get through it? Is it here to keep us in? Finally, the very first spark of dawn leaked through the veil of fire, signaling the end of curfew. Finally, Jin and I could move. The streets were already flooding with people, men and women stumbling out of their houses, eyes upon the fire-filled sky above us. The same questions that the rebellion had been asking me were on everyone's lips. Jin and I dodged around them as quickly as we could without attracting suspicion. Both of our gazes were fixed on the compass in Jin's hand, the one that was paired with Ahmed's. Our rebel prince had had his compass with him when he was taken prisoner. "He still has it," I said out loud to be sure, as we rushed through the tight streets of the city. I could feel my breath coming short the closer we got to the palace. That was where the prisoners had been held yesterday, before Emin's execution. They had to still be there, or somewhere else in the city. But as we neared the wide, richer streets that surrounded the palace, the compass needle didn't swing toward the Sultan's wall. Instead, it kept pointing south. We passed the palace, my heart feeling tighter with every step we took away from the palace. We'd figured our rebels were still being held within the palace walls. Hell, we'd counted on it. Now all I had to cling to was a faint hope that they were at least still in the city, that Jin's compass might track down its pair before we reached the wall. It didn't. The sky outside the wall of fire had gone from pink to gold as we reached the south gate. Zaman's Gate, named for the first Sultan of Miraji. Just beyond it, the wall of fire rose. It looked a whole lot more imposing up close than it had standing under it. It seemed to snap and crackle angrily, sparking at intervals like it was hungry for destruction, like it would consume anything that dared try to cross it. And the compass in Jin's hand was pointing straight toward it. They were outside the city. The Sultan had sent the prisoners beyond the city and put a wall up around us. We were trapped here while they were out there, taken somewhere to be imprisoned for the rest of their lives without trial, our Sultan's version of mercy. We could feel the heat pouring off the wall from here,
but Jin picked up a stone from the street. He bounced it up and down in his palm a few times. It made him look young, like a kid about to cause mischief. And then he chucked the stone at the wall. It didn't bounce back toward us, as it would against a regular wall, or pass through as it would normal fire. It incinerated as it hit, turned from stone to ash in the space of a heartbeat. We would burn even faster than that if we tried to walk through. My first thought was that the Sultan was trying to keep us from getting to the prisoners, to keep me from getting away so he could sink his hooks into me again and drag me back to the palace. But Jin said my next thought before I could.
It doesn't make sense.
He pushed a hand through his hair, dislodging his Shima. I glanced around quickly to see if there was anyone who might spot us.
Not if he thinks Ahmed is dead. All this, it can't be for our benefit.
He wasn't wrong. In the Sultan's mind, we were defeated. An act of war against us this large would be wasted. Then who do you reckon it is for?
We got our answer before the sun set. As we were waiting anxiously for news from the palace, for something the Sultan might say to his people about what we had all woken up to.
The twins circled above the palace in the shapes of larks, taking turns to dash back to the house and report on the comings and goings. But there was nothing much of interest.
That was until just before sunset.
Iz and Maz returned together, two sand-colored birds crisscrossing each other frantically in the sky before they landed on the rooftop, becoming boys again as they did.
Invaders!
Iz spoke first, trying to catch his breath.
Coming from the west!
Blue and gold banners, Maz added, breathing hard, his chest rising and falling. My heart faltered. The Galen were marching on the city.
The desert's all too familiar occupiers. Come to take our country for themselves once and for all.
That was what the wall was for. Not to keep us in, to keep them out. The city was protected, but we were trapped.
Chapter 2 The Deathless Sultima. Once there was a desert under siege, and a sultan without an heir to defend it. The desert had many enemies. They came from the east and the west and the north to occupy the desert's cities, enslave its people, and steal its weapons to fight other wars in faraway lands. The sultan saw his desert was under siege from many a side, and that his own forces were outnumbered man to man. And so he summoned his enemy's kings, queens, and princes to his palace. He called it a truce. His enemies saw it as surrender. It was neither. In truth, it was a trap. The sultan turned soldiers made of metal and magic on his enemies and reduced their leaders to dust. Many of the sultan's enemies retreated, but the great empire spreading across the north heard the sultan's declaration of war against them and resolved to answer it. They were enraged by the slaughter of their king and their soldiers, and so their young, impulsive prince, soon to take his father's place, ordered his forces to march on the great desert city and destroy it. The sultan heard of the approaching threat, and he had no small number of sons whom he might have sent into battle to face the approaching armies. But he had no heir. His firstborn had died at the hands of the rebel prince, who was consumed by jealousy and sought the throne for himself. Or so it was said by some. There were others who said that the rebel prince was no traitor, but rather a hero. And those men and women cried out that the rebel prince should be the one to defend the desert, not any of the sultan's sons raised in the palace, but his true prodigal heir. But even as the enemy's army approached, the rebel prince was captured.
No matter that the people cried out for him to save them, they could not save him as he was delivered to the executioner's block. For the people of the desert knew that it did not matter if he was a rebel or a traitor or a hero. All men were only mortal in the end. And yet, when the axe fell, some who saw it swore that he seemed to be more than a mere mortal, that they witnessed his soul leave his body in a great light and transform into a shield of fire around their city. They whispered that the rebel prince had answered their call for succor, even in death. Just as Ashra the Blessed had answered the desert's call in time of need thousands of years ago. And sure enough, when the invaders arrived, they found a great barrier of fire protecting the desert city. The invaders could not attack, and the people of the desert praised the rebel prince for shielding them. The invaders could do nothing except surround the city and wait for the wall of fire to fail, or for the Sultan to send a champion, a prince and heir, to lead his armies against them. On the first day of the siege, the Sultan's eldest surviving son, a great swordsman, came to him and asked that he might bear the honor of leading their armies in battle against the invaders at their gates. But the Sultan refused him. He did not know if this son was worthy. On the second day, the Sultan's second eldest son, a great archer, came to him and asked that he might have the honor of leading men in raining arrows down on the enemies who surrounded them. But again the Sultan refused, unsure if he was worthy. On the third day, the Sultan's third son came, and he too was refused. Days passed, then weeks, with no heir chosen to fight the enemies. The people of the city grew restless. Finally, the Sultan, having rebuffed every one of his sons old enough to fight, declared that a new heir would be chosen by trial in battle, as had been the way of the desert since the time of the first Sultan. The people flocked to the palace to see the trial, crowding around the steps for a glimpse of the men who each might become their ruler. The Sultan appeared before his people and told them that though he still grieved his firstborn son, he saw now that a new heir must be chosen for the good of his country and his people. But the Sultan had scarcely begun to speak when the people watching heard another voice. "He lies." It was the voice of a woman. She did not shout. She whispered. But they heard her clearly all the same, as if she had spoken in their ears, or from within their own minds. The assembled people cast around in astonishment, looking for the woman bold enough to speak of their exalted ruler so. And as they did, they saw a thing that was scarcely to be believed. The woman who had spoken stood not at their side, but before them, holding her severed head between her hands, pressed close to her heart. Where her head should have been, her neck ended in a bloody stump. Those who recognized her passed the word on to those who did not, and soon it swept through all the onlookers that standing before them was the blessed Sultima, the traitor wife to their now dead Sultim, executed by her husband's order, returned from the dead. Though her lips did not move, they all heard her speak. "He lies," she said again, hair fluttering freely over her fingers as she stared accusingly out across the crowd. "And lying is a sin." Scarcely had she spoken when the sky darkened, and when the people of Isman looked up, a great sandstorm had rushed in to crown the city and hide the sun, plunging the palace into shadow, even as the blessed Sultima glowed ever more brilliantly.
The people cowered under this wrathful storm, which the dead girl had brought to hang over their heads, like an axe that might fall and kill them before her very eyes, just as she had been killed before theirs. They dropped to their knees, praying for mercy, though they did not know if they prayed to God or the dead girl. But the dead Saltima was not interested in mercy, only in truth. It was not the rebel prince who killed the Sultim. Her voice was clear even over the rising wind that balanced the sand over their heads. It was his own father. The Saltima's bloody hand shot out, pointing toward the Sultan on his balcony high above his people. Her head spilled from her hands and toppled to the ground, so that its eyes stared angrily up at him. But her voice never wavered. He killed his son in cold blood, as he did his brothers and his father. And he now stands before you pretending grief, while he prepares to send more of his sons to their deaths against the invaders he has brought down on this city. On their knees in front of this miraculous apparition, the citizens of Isman believed her. For what reason would the dead have to lie? Then the Saltima lifted her head from the ground where it had fallen, turning it to fix her eyes on the princes behind her. One dropped to his knees. Another drew a bow, firing an arrow toward her already blood-soaked chest. It passed straight through the deceased Saltima, as if through water, planting into the ground behind her. The Saltima looked at the arrow dispassionately, before turning back to the princes, who were helpless against her words. No new Saltim will be chosen from this pack of unworthy princes. The true Saltim was already chosen, and I come here with a warning. Later, those among the crowd would tell of how she cradled her head in her hands, like it was the child who had been taken from her too soon. The child who had not been born of her husband, but, some said, of a genie. Of course they should choose the mother of one of their children as their messenger from beyond this world. The rebel prince is the true heir. He must rule in Miraji, or else no sultan will ever rule again. Our country will fall to war and conquest, and the very armies who wait by our gates. It will be divided and bled dry by our enemies. This sultan can bring only darkness and death. Only the true heir to Miraji can bring peace and prosperity. A great cry rose from the crowd then, though all heard the words she spoke next. The rebel prince will rise again. He will bring a new dawn, a new desert. Chapter 3 Isman looked different from above. I was standing on the ledge of the great prayer house, and I could see the crowd assembled for the Saltim trials far below us. That was why we'd picked this spot, to keep an eye on this morning's proceedings, because it sure as hell wasn't for the comfort of it. I shifted as much as I dared on the narrow ledge, trying to get a better view of what was going on. I teetered forward a little as gravity reached up for me, and to my right, Jin instinctively grabbed my arm, steadying me before I could plunge hundreds of feet to my death. "I don't have it in me to lose you too, bandit," he said as he anchored me to our perch. Maz and Iz flanked us. They'd flown us up here, taking the form of two giant rocks just before daybreak when people started to gather. The sun hitting the golden dome of the prayer house made it blaze so bright it almost blinded me, even with my back to it, which meant it would blind anyone in the crowd who might happen to glance up our way, making us seem like kaleidoscopic illusions in the light instead of flesh and blood.
When I was down in the streets, the city was a latticed puzzle box. Sharp corners, hidden alcoves, unexpected dead ends. Long streets pierced occasionally by windows that leaked whole other worlds onto the dusty paving stones. Narrow passages made all the narrower for being lined by market stalls and a steady stream of people. The whole thing littered by colorful canopies blotting out the sky. I still hadn't managed to solve the city, even after nearly a month of being trapped inside it by the Great Dome of Fire. I knew it was one of Layla's unnatural inventions the moment I saw it. But the people had drawn the same conclusion as Sara that first night, that it was ancient magic, the likes of which hadn't been seen since the end of the First War. Many were calling it Ahmed's Wall. Some had even begun praying to it. Ahmed's acolytes, so-called. Men and women who singed their clothing and smeared their faces in ash and spent their days trying to get as close to the Great Barrier of Fire as they could in order to pray for it to hold against the invaders at our gates. No matter how many times the Sultan's soldiers turned them away, they kept coming back, dawn after dawn. A few had even died getting too close to the barrier, disintegrating like the stone Jin had thrown at it the day it appeared. They preached that Ahmed had saved us all. Though I hated to admit it, it was possible the barrier had saved us, even if I knew it was nothing to do with Ahmed. From up here on our perch, I could see the lines of blue tents encircling our city with military precision. Waiting. Just as they had been for weeks. After the twins saw them on the horizon, it wasn't long before they got to the city. But that was where their invasion stalled. They couldn't get through the barrier on their side any more than we could. Their bullets had disintegrated against the barrier of fire, too. Soon enough, the Gallen had gone silent. Even if they hadn't gone anywhere else, we all knew better than to think they would give up so easy. The Gallen had occupied our desert for nearly 2 decades. They had put our Sultan on his throne, helping him usurp his father and brother, and in return he had let them impose their laws on us, let their twisted beliefs guide them to kill Denji and First Beings, force our poorest people into dangerous labor to churn out enough weapons for them to fight their wars, inflict their violence on us without fear of repercussion from the law. The Sultan had let it happen and waited until the Gallen didn't serve his purposes anymore. Only then had he tried to annihilate them using Norsham, my brother, a Demji who could flatten cities. He had turned the thing they hated most, magic, against them. But we'd gotten in the way before Norsham could finish them off. I wanted the Gallen out as much as anyone, but he would have killed a whole lot of Mirajin citizens in his path, too. In the end, the only thing the Sultan achieved was making enemies of our occupiers. And now here we were, under siege from the largest empire in the world. They seemed to think they could wait us out on the other side of that wall of fire. Isman was bound to run out of supplies eventually. But I knew a thing or two about the Sultan. He didn't play games he didn't think he could win. I wondered how many Mirajin villages and towns the Gallen had stormed through on the way to Isman. How many people had died in their path as the Sultan waited for them to come to him. The Sultan had claimed to me once that his purpose was to protect his country, that he would make Miraji a force to be reckoned with, one that no foreign army would occupy ever again. And maybe he'd do it. But every step toward that looked to me like a little more power in the Sultan's hands, and bodies trampled on the way. The people of Miraji had not agreed to be pieces in this game the Sultan was playing against foreign invaders. The rebellion was going to end the game. As soon as we figured out how the hell to get out of this city, we were going to get Ahmed back, and Rahim back, and Shahzad, and Delilah,
and all the others who had been captured, and we were going to end this.
A bead of sweat tracked its way from under my shima, down my neck, and under my kurta.
You all right, Bandit?
Jin asked me, his voice low next to my ear.
I'd have liked to have been able to lie and tell him that I was fit as a fiddle. But since I couldn't, I didn't answer at all.
It's time, I said, spreading my hands out across the city below, sprawling my fingers as far as they would go. Get ready.
I might not be able to reach the dunes beyond the Sultan's artificial barricade, but this city was full of desert dust. It was in its bones, its very soul. I pulled.
The wound in my side twinged with pain, like a muscle protesting use.
It had been doing that ever since the metal was removed from my skin. The scar on my side pained me like it remembered the iron and was fighting back against my Demji power. It was getting worse every time. And once or twice, I felt like the sand might slip out of my grip altogether. I ignored it as best I could, as the dust rose out of the streets in a golden haze, like steam rising off a bath. From between cobblestones, in where it was trapped in folds of clothes and resting on leaves and roof gardens, filling the air, swirling up and gathering together. 1,000 tiny grains of sand, nothing on their own, scattered across the city, but joining together into a riotous storm. Somewhere below us in the crowd gathered to watch the Sultan trials was Hala, bundled up to her eyebrows against prying gazes that might notice her golden skin. She was with two other rebels who'd escaped with us, Riyad and Karam. I trusted them both to keep her safe, or carry her away if the illusion became too much for her. It was an illusion on a bigger scale than Hala had ever managed before. The blessed Saltima come back to life. My cousin Shira, exactly as she looked in my nightmares, her head detached, her eyes full of accusations, projected into thousands of people's minds at once, to deliver a message designed to spark doubt over the Sultan and stall the Sultan trials. It was a desperate, risky thing to do, stretching Hala's powers to their limit. But we had to do something. The last thing we needed was the country falling in line behind a new prince while we were trying to rescue the old one. Besides, stalling the Sultan trials was only our second purpose. Hala was the distraction. I was the cover. What we really needed was to get into the palace. Things can be a distraction and serve the cause at the same time. Shahzad had told me that once, when she'd first tried to rescue me from the harem with pamphlets raining from the sky. But then Shahzad made everything seem easy. Two targets, one bullet. That I could understand. Two purposes, one plan. I heard a shout from below as Hala's illusion crept into the minds around her, and for a moment my own focus faltered, my powers slipping out of my grip. I felt the burning pain in my side start to ease. It was such a relief that for just a second it made me want to let go, to drop the storm and stop the pain. To just let everything go and rest. I wrestled the sand back hastily, and instantly the pain came back with it as I fought for control. I worked until the sandstorm covered the square below in a swirling mass, shielding us from sight. My side still ached. I shifted, trying to ease the pain, and the storm shifted with me unexpectedly. I couldn't stall giving the signal any longer. I was struggling to hold on already. I turned my head just far enough toward Jin and the twins to be heard over the storm and said, "Now!" They didn't need to be told twice. Maz had been bursting for hours, shifting restlessly from one shape to another, waiting for the order.
Now a huge grin spread over his face as he flung aside the cloak he was wearing, sending it tumbling down into the sandstorm below as he jumped from the edge of the roof without a second thought. For a moment, he was just a boy in midair, at the pinnacle of a leap before the inevitable fall, the moment when you stopped flying and came crashing back down to Earth. And then he stopped being just a boy. His body shifted, arms turning to wings, feet becoming claws, skin exploding into feathers. Iz followed, flinging the bundle on his back around into his mouth as it turned into a beak before he launched himself from the edge. If the crowd below us had been able to see, it might have looked like a pair of rocks had just burst from the golden dome of the prayer house, like some mystical egg had hatched them. They soared gracefully above the storm that hid them, desperately happy to be moving again. Unlike the twins, Jin had barely moved since we got up here. He was good at that, at stillness when everyone around us was restless. But I could read it in him all the same, there below his skin, impatience waiting to burst into action. It had been there for weeks now, since the day we saw Emin executed as Ahmed, since the night we found out we were trapped here, unable to get our people back. Unable to save the family that he had protected for years. Sometimes I caught him with his hand opening and closing over the brass compass compulsively, but that was the only sign he gave that he was as worried as the rest of us. Now he spared me a sideways glance, a heartbeat, just long enough for me to give him a nod, assurance that I was fine, that I could hang on. I wasn't about to tell him pain was searing through my side from the old wound, and I didn't know how long I could keep this up. Jin gave me a small, wry smile back, a ghost of the one he used to have back when things were simpler and there were other people running this rebellion for us. The smile that said we were about to get into trouble. We were already in trouble now. And then he stepped into thin air. Maz soared below him, catching Jin on his back easily, then shifting directions with one effortless beat of his wings to carry him toward the palace, where Iz waited in all his blue, feathered glory. I let out an uneasy breath, fighting the urge to drop one of my hands and press it against my aching side. We needed a way through this impossible wall and out of the city. We'd already searched the whole perimeter of Ismon for some kind of gap, a gate, a fissure we could squeeze through, something, anything. But the city was locked up tight as a drum. Which meant we needed to look somewhere else for a way out. Somewhere like the mess of papers strewn across the Sultan's desk that included everything from supply routes for the army to letters addressed to foreign rulers inviting them to Aurangzeb, the celebration of the Sultan's ascendancy to the throne. I had rifled through these same papers during my own time in the palace. Only we didn't have a spy in the palace anymore. So we needed to get back in if we were going to get information out. This was far from our first try at getting in. Sam had made a stab at going through the palace walls first a few weeks back. His strange, albish magic allowed him to slip through solid stone like it was water. It was a gift no one in Meraji had ever seen, and so nobody knew to guard against it. Only we'd shown our hand when the Sultan ambushed us. After our narrow escape, the Sultan knew exactly what extraordinary powers we had up our sleeves. The walls of the palace were now lined on the inside with wooden panels, which were as solid to Sam as to anybody else. And more than that, they were expecting us to try that night. The bullet would have torn straight through his heart if Sam hadn't moved at the last second, unable to resist, leaning back through the wall to where we waited, cloaked in Hala's illusion, to toss some offhand sarcastic comment. The gunshot caught him in the shoulder instead. There was a lot of blood. Everywhere.
smeared on the stone of the wall as he stumbled out, with no retreat except into the open. On my hands when I caught him as he lost consciousness. On Jin's shirt when he heaved him over his shoulder hastily. Soaked into the once clean linens of the bed when we finally got him back to the hidden house still breathing. Barely. Not that saving him did us much good in the long run. But that was how we learned our lesson. We had to wait for a cleaner shot. Even if every second we waited meant the prisoners were getting farther away from us. Meant they might be getting tortured. Might be killed. We had to wait. The Soul Team Trials was the shot we'd been waiting for. So we had to take it, no matter how desperate it was. Below me, Iz spread his huge blue wings, riding an updraft from the sandstorm I was creating, letting it carry him over the palace, his huge shadow skimming easily over the walls and the gardens of the harem, then over the glass dome that crowned the Sultan's chambers. We couldn't get in through the walls. Fine. We'd try something less subtle. Iz dropped the explosives he was carrying, sending them careening down toward the glass. The dome exploded, shattering into a rain of shards that caught the sun like stars falling from the heavens. Jin and Maz plunged through the new entrance to the palace, straight into the Sultan's rooms, even as Iz circled back for me. He soared below me, and I took a deep breath, fighting to keep the sandstorm under my control, even as I split my attention. The pain was distracting, but I had to trust that if I jumped, Iz would catch me. So, bending my knees just a little, spreading my body flat, I leapt into nothingness. I landed on Iz's back, and the impact knocked the air out of my lungs, turning my vision black. But I didn't let go. I fought to hold on to his back and to the desert as he soared upward. We didn't have much time. Hala's illusions ought to work on the people of Izman, get them to believe Shira really had come back from the dead. But the Sultan would guess it was us easily enough. And it wouldn't take him long to figure out that we were doing more than just whipping his people into a frenzy against him and his sons. He would come looking for us. I was going to have to buy Jin some more time. Iz looped us around in the air until we were over the shattered dome. Jin and Maz had disappeared from sight, retreating to the Sultan's study. I could just make out the edge of the table where the Sultan and I had once sat, eating a duck I had killed in his gardens while he needled at my mind, making me doubt Ahmed. It was covered in shards of glass now. Ignoring the shooting pain in my side, I pushed away from Iz's back so I could see the sand. I fought to keep my balance, even as the wind whipped through my hair, lashing it around my face, tugging at my clothes. I took a deep breath and gathered the sand back toward us, tightening my grip. I lifted my arms, pulling upward, as I would if I were clearing the sandstorm. But instead of letting it scatter through the streets of Izman, I whipped it in a great swirling vacuum toward us. The sand shot past me, narrowly missing Iz's wing, the force buffeting him upward. I didn't lose my grip as he beat his wings, frantically trying to regain his balance. I plunged every grain of sand I'd drawn from Izman's streets down through the broken glass dome in a tightly controlled cascade, ignoring the twisting agony. I focused the sand toward the hallway that led into the Sultan's chambers, flooding it, blocking the entrance like a stopper in a bottle, cutting off any access the soldiers might have to Jin. I let go. The pain finally eased, going from a sharp stab to a dull ache as it retreated. I slumped down onto Iz's back as I looked down on my work. It wouldn't last forever. It was sand. They would dig through it eventually. But it ought to take long enough for Jin to find what we needed, if it was even there. With a few powerful beats of his wings,
is carried us up and out of reach of gunfire from the ground. The palace spread out below us like a little toy model.
Soldiers were already running toward the Sultan's chambers.
Men and women in the square dropped to their knees as the vision of Shira dissipated from their minds.
The 12 princes stood in shock, one standing, sword drawn, with nothing to fight.
Others fled the sandstorm and the sound of the explosion nearby and the sudden appearance of a giant rock hovering above them. And then I spotted a lone figure in the gardens of the harem, staring up at us. It was her stillness that caught my eye.
I knew her on sight, even this far away, from the way she tied her hair and the slope of her shoulders.
She was like a statue, as motionless as one of her Abdals before they moved in for the kill.
Layla, our traitor princess.
Chapter 4. She looked tiny from up here, like a mouse staring up at a falcon, too foolish to run from it. I leaned down to Iz's head, pointing past him toward her. He might be in an animal shape, but he could understand me just fine. I wanted him to take me down to her. I felt him hesitate below me for a few huge, ponderous wing beats. He didn't want to enter the harem. It wasn't part of our plan. I could almost hear Shahzad's voice in my mind. No, by all means, Amani. We only spent months trying to get you out of the harem, but go ahead, go straight back in when I'm not there to bail you out. If it were Ahmed, he would listen to her good counsel like he always did. He would be cautious. But Shahzad and Ahmed had been captured because of Layla, and that left me in charge of this rebellion with no good counsel to listen to. I voiced the command.
Iz, take me to the ground.
This time he obeyed.
I tightened my grip on his back as he plunged, diving straight toward the gardens of the harem.
Layla realized she was our target far too late. We were on her as she tried to look for cover, the force of the air from Iz's wings knocking her down. As she scrambled backward clumsily, I slid off Iz's feathered back, my feet landing in the harem for the first time since I'd escaped.
Iz took the shape of a huge blue lion, springing for her before she could find her footing, front paws pinning her to the ground.
She didn't scream as he flattened her out on her back, razor teeth inches from her face. She just squeezed her eyes shut, like she thought she was ready to die. She was trying to be brave. She was good at it, too. Layla had spent several days with us, her enemies, pretending to be on our side, without so much as flinching. I might admire her if she weren't our enemy.
Iz, I ordered. Let her up.
He did what I said, pulling back his snarling face and slowly removing his weighty paw from her chest.
As soon as she was released, Layla scrambled backward, her shoulders bumping into the wall behind her, halting any farther retreat.
We were both silent for a long moment, Layla breathing hard as she watched me.
I pulled out my gun, deciding exactly what I wanted to do with her.
I hadn't thought that far when I'd plunged us down here.
So,
I'd better start us off.
My guess is that we have your brilliant mind to thank for this.
I glanced up at the dome of fire in the sky, looking for the right word, even as I pulled out my gun.
This whole mess?
I opened the chamber of the pistol and checked how many bullets I had.
6 whole shots.
Good.
My father's guards? Layla started, a slight tremor in her voice.
My guess would be that your father's guards are going to get sent to check on his paperwork before his daughter.
The whole of the harem was strangely quiet around us. There was only the sound of Layla's panicked gasps and the loud click as the chamber of the gun snapped back into place. She winced at the sound. Or maybe it was at hearing that truth so plainly laid out.
You're not going to kill me.
But her eyes flicked to the gun all the same, like she wasn't sure. I only had a year or two on her, but she seemed a whole lot younger. I'd grown up fast in the desert. She was a child from the palace. I searched myself for some sympathy, but I didn't have any left for this girl who had betrayed me, who had cost us so much because of my carelessness in believing she was as innocent as she looked.
Want to bet your life on that?
I pointed the gun at her head, and Layla cringed away, like she could make herself too small a target to hit. She was underestimating what a good shot I was. But I didn't fire.
Here's how this is going to go.
I tried to sound sure of what I was doing, like this was a real plan and not some stupid idea I'd thought up halfway through doing it. Like I wasn't just a girl from Dustwalk with a gun, pretending I could get information out of the brilliant little head of a girl born so far above me, she shouldn't even be able to see me if she deigned to look down.
I'm going to ask you a question and pull this trigger. And if you answer me truthfully, the bullet will hit that wall behind you. If you lie to me, the bullet is going to draw blood. Is that clear?
It sure looked like it was clear from the sudden fearful understanding on her face.
I was a Demji. I could only speak the truth. And now I wasn't the one deciding whether that bullet would hit her. She was.
From where he was sitting, still wearing the shape of a lion, I thought I saw Iz shift uneasily. I knew what he was thinking. I was getting myself into awfully deep waters here, but it was too late to go back now.
Now,
I took aim.
How do we bring it down, this little wall of fire you've got around the city?
Layla looked me in the eyes.
You can't.
I pulled the trigger before she'd even finished speaking, and before I could think twice about what I was doing. The bullet hit her in the arm. The scream that tore through her was all the confession I needed. I swept my gaze over the garden behind us quickly. That wasn't going to have gone unheard. Not even in the harem, where the women were practiced at ignoring the terrible things happening around them.
Remember how much that hurts when you answer that again,
I said, as I turned my gaze back on a now bleeding Layla, trying to hide my nerves while I pulled back the hammer, letting the next bullet slide into place.
Tell me how, or this bullet is hitting your knee, and if you ever want to walk again, you'll have to get yourself a metal leg like the one you got Tamid. You remember Tamid, don't you? A friend of mine? The one you convinced me you had a soft spot for, so you could use him to lure your father to us?
Layla was breathing through her nose, pain written all over her, but muddling with rage now. Getting shot would do that to you.
You can't bring the wall down, she spat back.
But before I could fire again, she kept babbling quickly.
Because I haven't built the way yet. Until I do, the only way to get rid of the wall is to disable the machine.
She meant the great contraption she had built under the palace that had killed and trapped the genie Farishtay, turning him into energy to feed her unholy machines like the Abdals. And now the contraption was powering this great dome of fire surrounding the city.
And for that, you need the right words.
I needed the words that would free the gene from the trap I had summoned them to.
With those, we could free the living gene as well as Farishtay's energy, which was powering the machine that fed life into all of Layla's little inventions.